This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Mike Strands. Mike is Vice President of Advocacy with the National Farmers Union in Washington, D.C. Mike, great to see you.
Good to see you too, Tony. Glad to join you today outside.
So we're outside D.C., and what's really surprising, one of two things, not raining and not 150 degrees.
Downright seasonable today. Yeah, I'm usually accustomed to some really inclement June weather, and today is pleasant.
So let's talk, when we talk about the weather and how it can get really warm in D.C. is one thing, but when you're working out in fields or in, you know, dairy barns or, you know, hog farms, whatever, that can get pretty miserable, and it just tees us up to talk about farm labor and the need for some additional reform. What are you watching on that front?
Certainly. Over the last 10 years, we've been trying to find ways to make sure that there are workable systems for farm labor in the U.S. The current system doesn't work well for anybody, and that goes for the workers, the farmers, regulators, enforcement agencies. We're in a tough spot right now. Now, I think overall, when you look at the total immigration reform package or all the different issues that go with that, the ag labor piece probably has some of the most agreement amongst stakeholders as any other piece. So time and time again, we've seen ag labor reform as maybe the quote-unquote easier part of immigration reform in general. So it's kind of at an impasse right now with Senate and House negotiations going on. It's hard to know exactly what the next step will be, but the ag component probably is the easiest lift. Hopefully, we can find a way to either move ag separately from the rest of the immigration packages, or it can be part of the broader picture. It's hard to say how that will work out right now, but we do know that the current system doesn't work well for anybody, and we need to move on from that.
And when we talk about ag labor reform and having some broad consensus on both sides of the aisle, does that appear to be enough that we can go ahead and push that through, even in today's environment, if you will?
Yeah, we'll have to see, because it's perhaps the area in immigration reform that has the most agreement, but there are a lot of other players involved besides agriculture in immigration reform debates. And you might not want to be split off from the rest of the group, even if it seems like an easy lift. So time will tell. I think some of the leadership in the House and the Senate will take a look at that. And knowing how important it is for agriculture, for farmers, for farm workers, hopefully that will move it up the priorities list.
So when we talk about splitting things up, I know you spent some time on the Hill in some congressional offices. A few years back, we tried to split the farm bill apart, and it didn't quite go the way we had hoped.
Yeah, the last couple farm bills have gone through some legislative gymnastics in order to get passed. And what is important to keep in mind is at the end of the day, we need to have broad bipartisan support for bills in order to get them to pass, especially agriculture and nutrition and farm bills. So the longtime alliance of sorts between hunger advocates and farm advocates is still the winning combination to get farm bills done. Now, in the 2012, 13, 14 farm bill and in the 2018 bill, yeah, things were split apart for a while there, but ultimately had to come back together. I think each time the farm bill gets fractured like that, it loses some of its strength. And while it needed to happen, I guess, last time around, it's probably not something we should get in the habit of. If we did it again in the 2023 farm bill, that'd be three times in a row, and that doesn't seem like a good idea.
Well, let's talk about something else that I know you've been watching as well, and this is not farm labor reform, but it's reform to the Packers and Stockyards Act. And this comes really at a time where we've been experiencing some cybersecurity attacks, renewed talk about the concerns of the concentration on the Packer side. What are you watching there?
Well, after three big disruptions to the cattle and livestock markets, whether it was the Holcomb fire a couple years ago, the pandemic, of course, and now just a couple weeks ago, the JBS cyber attack, there have been some huge shocks to the system in cattle and in livestock markets in general. It's not news for Farmers Union and for many cattlemen and ranchers to have spoken out against increasing consolidation and a lack of competition in beef and cattle markets. But coupled with those three big events, I think there's more public awareness than there's been in a long time, and more engagement from legislative individuals and with regulatory agencies. So it seems that USDA and the Department of Justice, but USDA in particular, is ready to dust off some rulemaking processes that were either left off in the last decade or wound down during the last administration. So we saw some early indications just on Friday as USDA released its list of, or its regulatory agenda for the coming months. Three of the rules within that have to do with the Packers and Stockyards Act, which we at Farmers Union see as an important step forward.
When we do talk about that, we sometimes focus on the Packers side and the concentration there. But there's a growing interest in smaller producers as well. And are we seeing that gain some traction at this point?
So with the interruptions we saw in the markets with the Holcomb fire, with the pandemic, and with the JBS cyber attack, it has shown that it's important to have a lot of different marketing streams, or at least more marketing streams, so that farmers and ranchers have access to markets when something goes down. USDA, in response to some of the stimulus bills that were passed in late 2020 and in March of 2021, has the funding available to put more money into small and medium-sized processing options in the livestock sector, and they've announced their intention to do so late last week. Now, the details about that are still coming together, and we expect USDA to have more to say on that soon, but the fact remains, money's going towards that, and there's going to be a greater emphasis on diversifying the ag processing realm, and in doing so, we'll have a more resilient food sector. So it seems to be on the way.
Talk about funding from USDA, and we also think of this conversation that's been going on dealing with climate opportunities. And, you know, when I think about ag groups that have been involved in this conversation the longest, National Farmers Union is at the top of the list. So when we start looking at these potential climate opportunities for producers, given the focus by both Congress and the administration, what do you see there?
So Farmers Union has been advocating for a market-based climate opportunity for farmers for 15 years, a couple decades. It's been around. We had the North Dakota Farmers Union carbon credit exchange program going on. We had involvement with the markets in the late parts of the last decade, back in 2006 to 2010. And now some of those ideas are coming right back around, and they are now at the forefront of the policy discussion here in D.C., both on the legislative front, but also on development of private markets. So with the various proposals out there, including the Growing Climate Solutions Act, we see farmers having a look in towards how companies and organizations and other entities can put together climate markets. So the Growing Climate Solutions Act that has seen broad support in the House and the Senate sets the groundwork and kind of puts down a set of rules, serves as the referee, if you will, for what voluntary carbon credit markets can look like. And we're really seeing that as the next step into making that a more stable and workable long-term solution.
You mentioned North Dakota, and it's probably a good opportunity to just explain National Farmers Union real quick and the importance of your state association.
Yeah, Farmers Union has, we have organized divisions in 33 states. Some of those divisions are comprised of multiple states. Some of our largest states are found kind of up and down the Great Plains, from North Dakota to Oklahoma. We've got a strong presence throughout the Midwest and Mountain West, and also the New England Farmers Union. And we do have members in all 50 states, but by and large, we see the most of them in the Midwest.
And policy decisions, your marching orders, do they come from D.C. or do they come at that grassroots level?
So Farmers Union's policy is developed every year through our grassroots policy process. We have about 200 voting delegates that gather. This year we gathered via Zoom, but normally we'd be getting together in a convention hall someplace. Hopefully in 2022 we'll be back to in-person with a convention in Denver in early March of 2022. So the orders come from the members, they come from the state presidents, and make their way to D.C. where here we try to do our best to get them signed into law or advocated for at USDA or elsewhere.
If we want to keep up with what's happening with National Farmers Union, can we find you online? And if so, where?
You can find us at www.nfu.org or follow our various social media channels on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. Look for NFUDC on either of those platforms. And we've got a pretty strong social media presence and want to keep everybody up to date with the latest in policy developments and other Farmers Union news there.
Again, Mike Stranz is Vice President of Advocacy with the National Farmers Union in Washington, D.C. on today's Agribusiness Report.